I'm going to be sick while they're at school from 8 to 3, and at 3 o'clock, it's game on. Like, I'm going to, even if I have to just pretend the whole time, like, I want them to see me be okay. And so, you know, but I think parenting obviously changes. Like, if you think you're going to die soon, you're not going to waste moments. You're going to be purposeful. You're going to, you know, make sure that you really try to soak it all in.
Thank you so much for tuning in. Let's get started here on the Who Is Your Mama podcast. Check out whoisyourmama.com. There you can book your very own legacy interview for your family. That's right. I will interview your family member. Maybe your mom, your dad, your grandma, your grandpa, your aunt, maybe your neighbor, anyone that made that big impact on you in your life. This is a chance for you to capture these conversations, these ideas, these insights from the people in your own life. Go check out, book yourself your very own legacy interview with me, Megan Riley. I am happy to do it. I love the idea of celebrating the amazing people in our lives who make us who we are. Go check it out at whoisyourmama.com. Today, I bring you a different type of episode here on the Who Is Your Mama podcast. Yes, you are going to hear from an incredible mom who is raising amazing children, but you are going to learn so much more. My guest today, Gina Tolley, has been an incredible guide in my life, and I just met her a little over a year ago. She has an incredible story to tell, and I want to give you the most up-to-date information because since we recorded this episode, some time has passed and there are some new updates to give. To jump to the bottom line, Gina was diagnosed with a terminal cancer 6 years ago. I asked her for the most up-to-date information just yesterday, and I was going to turn it into an intro, but I think Gina says it so perfectly. I'm going to share with you directly from Gina what she shared with me. So this is in the words of Gina Tolley. She says, "My 6-year canniversary comes up on July 10th. I just completed round 97 of chemo. Peyton, her oldest son, just completed his freshman year on the baseball team at Wichita State and is heading to California for some summer baseball. Her second son, Charlie, just completed his freshman year of high school and she says gets wittier and more charming every day. Her husband, Chad, and her, she says, enjoy coffee on the patio each morning and they have not gone one single day without belly laughing with each other. She goes on to say, I'm not sure how much of the sad you want to share, but the disease has moved into my abdominal cavity and into several lymph nodes around my heart. It's also in both lungs and one tumor is surrounding my esophagus. I'm fighting each and every day and continue to be shocked that I am as sick as they say I am. I am living life to the fullest each day and not planning on giving up anytime soon. What's crazy, Megan, is I really do feel okay. It's just crazy that this persistent thing is inside my body fighting so hard to take me. It hasn't stopped me from really, truly living. Like we've all talked about before, the thing killing me might be the very thing that actually made me come alive. Thanks for even caring about my story. If I'm walking through this so that one person can be encouraged or can fight harder or can cherish more or can be more purposeful, or to love their spouse better, or delight in their kids more, or love Jesus more fully, then this lot I have been given means it's worth something. We all continue to be so blessed. In 1,000 choices, I would never pick cancer, but what a blessing it has been. As you can see, you are in for a treat. Those were the words of Gina Tolley, and now you get to listen to a insightful, meaningful, heartfelt interview featuring the one and only Gina Tolley, where she discusses her life as a mom, her life with a terminal diagnosis and still raising her family. I am so proud to deliver to you the one and only Gina Tolley. Four years ago, Gina Tolley was given an overwhelming diagnosis of stage 4 cancer. At the time, Gina had 2 sons, 9-year-old Charlie and 13-year-old Peyton. Most of us can only imagine how terrifying that situation would have been. Now, 4 years later, Gina, with her husband, Chad, of 20 years by her side, has overcome so many expectations that doctors initially gave her. Her incredible attitude, faith, and family shine through every word she shares with us today. Gina talks about her parenting perspective as a mom of 2 who is also fighting for her life every day. How did she handle her diagnosis as a mom? What is it like to raise children when you have a terminal diagnosis? What advice does she have for others? Gina opens up so authentically, and her perspective reminds us that today we must be purposeful with time and our children. She is a legendary mama, leaving a purposeful legacy for her family to cherish forever. It is an honor to present to you Gina Tolley on Who Is Your Mama? You are listening to Who Is Your Mama? My name is Megan Riley. Listen and learn along with me as I chat with incredible moms who raised exceptional people. From chores to challenges to triumphs, we're going to hear firsthand what it's like raising a child who develops into an outstanding person. Today is a very special day on Who Is Your Mama podcast because I have a guest, Gina Tolley, with me today. And it is a very special day because I actually met Gina. I still haven't met you in person, Gina, but you have met my husband sitting in the bleachers at a baseball game in Oklahoma, correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
And basically, you guys hit it off. I think you and your husband were sitting there watching probably the same game my husband was watching. And you guys had some things in common and had a very instant connection. And then you all have continued via email. And then I was lucky enough to get to be introduced to you by my husband. And you are raising two sons, correct?
I am. Yes. Peyton and Charlie.
Awesome. Well, let's just jump in right now and have you tell me and tell our listeners a little bit about your family and then about yourself today.
Yeah, I thanks so much for having me. It's such an honor. And I am married to my, I say average husband, Chad, only because that's funny to everybody else is incredible. So we joke about saying average, but he it really is a great husband. We've been married. We just celebrated a couple of weeks ago, 20 years married. Wow. And we have two sons, Peyton, who's 17, who will be a senior this year. And Charlie, who turned 13 a little bit ago, and he will be an eighth grader. So we live kind of on the outskirts of Oklahoma City, and I played golf in college, and my husband was a decathlete in college, but both of our kids decided to play baseball, so we kind of knew nothing about the sport kind of going into it. So, yeah, it was great to meet your husband because I've learned that my husband will open any door. If he wants to go into a basketball arena or see something on a campus, he'll open any door, and I will talk to anybody. So I think we sat down, and I kind of saw Kristen. I guess we kind of had a feeling that he was somehow associated with baseball or whatever. And we ended up kind of small talking, and we ended up taking advantage of his time with asking him 1,000 questions. And then something led to me mentioning that I had cancer and that I had colon cancer. And he said, oh, that was my dad. And so we kind of connected more of just, it started off obviously with baseball, but then connected kind of a little bit deeper, more personable level. So it's funny. He'll just kind of get on my heart every once in a while, or your family will. And so I'll just shoot him an email. And I feel like I've tried to be pretty obedient so that if somebody is mentioned like that or gets on my heart, to reach out to them. So he's been so nice about responding. And I'm sure he gets an email from me and he's like, oh, this crazy lady's emailing me again. So I'm grateful that he's been nice about it.
Well, it's actually been the opposite. When your emails come, he's like, oh, I got an email. And then we usually sit there and read it. And we're normally like either in tears or laughing or something. You have a way with words for sure. But your description too of Chris is right on the money. Cause you see him at a baseball game, you're like, he's definitely involved in baseball. And so he just has that either serious or, you know, with his radar gun or whatever, but he is a scout. Yeah. And so good for you to start pinning him for questions as a parent, you know, like right away as a parent, you've got two baseball loving sons and you see a scout.
I don't know if any of our questions were really legitimate questions. Remember, they were just silly, but we decided to take advantage of the moment for sure.
So. Definitely. Well, that's so good for you. And so really, and I know that going through what Chris went through, once you've been through something where your parent, you know, has cancer or someone in your family, you just see it in a very different way. And what Chris learned is that it's good to talk about it with people that are going through it. But I would say I didn't know that until his dad had cancer. And then I was like, oh,
yeah.
It's good to talk about it, you know? So, you know, it's kind of like, otherwise it's like, let's be honest about what's going on here and you know, talk about it. Well, so for Who Is Your Mama, you know, we are going to talk about parenthood just like we always do on the show. And so I'm excited about that. Can you actually tell, just kind of give us an idea of where you are right now in your cancer diagnosis and treatment just to, we can all kind of be on the same page right now.
Yeah, I'll kind of start at the beginning. For several months, maybe even up to a year, I was having a really, just not every day, but just every once in a while, I was really sharp shooting pain kind of right under my rib cage on my right hand side. And so I would, of course, do like everybody else and get on WebMD, or I would call my nurse friends, hey, I'm having this thing, what's going on? And usually it would happen. I'm not a big drinker or anything like that, but if I would have like a taste of wine or maybe something fatty or something weird with my diet, I would have this pain. And so, of course, all my nurse friends are like, oh, it's your gallbladder. It's no big deal. You know, it gets aggravated sometimes. And so this one Sunday morning, I woke up about 3 a.m. and I had this really bad pain. And so, of course, I got on WebMD and what are home remedies for gallbladder pain? And so they said apple cider vinegar. And so we didn't have any apple cider vinegar. So I woke up my husband and said, hey, we have applesauce. Well, that works. Well, that should tell you that I'm a terrible mom because I was hoping to replace apple cider vinegar with applesauce. But I did go ahead and eat the applesauce and it subsided for a while. And we got up, I went back to bed and we got up and went to church that morning. And we got home about noontime and said, you know, this pain is really persistent. And I think I can go to the emergency room and they'll give me the elixir for your gallbladder. And then, you know, they kind of schedule surgery and on down the road. So I went to the emergency room. I've never been in my life and went with the idea that they were going to kind of give me this temporary fix and then we would schedule for surgery for that. So I got to the emergency room and they said, well, your liver enzymes are really elevated. And so then that went to a liver scan. I was there by myself and that went to a liver ultrasound and they just kept kind of focusing in on really hard on my liver, but like more on the side, not really where the pain was. And so I called my husband. I'm like, I think something's going on. Like, I think this is going to end up being a little bit more than just my gallbladder. So they ended up sending me for a CAT scan. And so my husband came back in the room with me and some doctors came in and my best friend, I called her because we were just living it up and we were laughing and joking in the emergency room and stuff. And she came in and the doctors came in. And that morning at church, we had sang the song, It Is Well. And so it just basically says, whatever my lot is going to happen. That was kind of what I was thinking. Whatever's going to happen, it's going to be okay. Like, you have a plan for me, Jesus. Like, mm-hmm. It's going to be okay. So I just kind of had that peace about me of just knowing kind of in my gut that something was going to happen, but whatever it was, it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And so a team of doctors came in the room, I don't know, probably 3 hours after I had gotten there. And they just walked in and they said, Gina, you have cancer. And I was like, listen, you're just an ER doctor. Can you really diagnose me with cancer? Like, I was so looked at the attendant. And they're like, listen, your cancer is so substantial that we know it for sure. And so my first words were, I love Jesus. Do you love Jesus? Because that's all that matters. And so that kicked us off of, we headed home that day and, you know, just kind of having the conversation of like, okay, I have cancer and how are we going to approach this with our kids? And at the time, Charlie was 9 and Peyton was 13. And so just kind of getting your mind around, like, how are we going to approach this? Are we going to be honest? My husband, whenever he was a freshman in college, his mom was diagnosed with cancer and she had a sarcoma and his parents kept telling them, everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. And then like 2 weeks before she died, they were like, hey, you got to come say goodbye. And he was like, I just never felt like they were being honest with me. So it was a lot harder for me to grieve this process or be involved with it because they were just not honest. So we tried to really approach it from the very beginning of being honest and being transparent, but also being the news being age applicable. So, you know, I was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. And so, you know, use your stage 4 and automatically a death sentence. And I just didn't want my kids to hear that. So we just came in the door and we were like, listen, we got a big fight on our hands and this is going to be a challenge for our family. But we just got all really rallied together. So we're a super close family anyway. We do so many fun things together and spend lots of times we're super close. And so, but initially when I was diagnosed, I had a tumor in my colon that was the size of an orange. And then I had about 6 tumors in my liver. My liver was the most involved. The largest was the size of a football. And the other one was about the size of a softball, a little bit bigger. Oh, and then I had 4 ping pong ball sized tumors as well. So I had cancer and I had it good. I had a lot of it. And so we just really went right away into treatments and surgeries and removing the primary tumor in my colon. And I remember meeting with my initial oncologist and she said, you know, listen, without treatment, you have about 3 months to live. And she said, the odds of you getting to a year with treatment is about 20%. The odds to getting to 3 years is about 5%. And the odds to getting to 5 years is about 1%. And so, you know, I just, I was like, well, only Jesus knows the numbers of my days. And so I'm not going to let you put that label on me. Like, you're going to write papers about me. Like, we're going to make a difference in this world with this cancer. And so I just said, tell me the trick. Like, is it exercise? Thank God you said no to that. But exercise, nutrition, is it, you know, hydration? Is it rest? Like, what's the secret? What's going to get it? And she was, listen, I'm going to tell you, it's your attitude. It's just how you present this to everybody and how you believe in it. Like, your attitude is going to make all the difference. And so just from that day forward, I was like, listen, this is my lot. This is what you gave me to carry. And I'm going to use this to hopefully impact people. And so we just kind of took off running from there. So where I am today is I've had 13 different surgeries. I've had my spleen removed, my gallbladder removed, part of my liver removed, part of my diaphragm removed. I've had part of my colon removed with a primary tumor. And so, you know, we've had lots of surgeries, but I've also gone through 68 rounds of chemo. I just finished up round 68 this week. So, you know, listen, I'm fighting every day. And so I just really feel like this is what God placed on me. To some people were called to Ethiopia or Africa to be missionaries. And I feel like every time I walk into that treatment room, that's my place. That's where I can shine my light. And that if people can see me reacting, hopefully in a positive way, then, you know, hopefully that gives them a little bit of encouragement that they can do the same thing. So, and it's been a big thing to my kids, I think, for them to see that, you know, listen, sometimes life just is crummy and it just sucks that you get dealt a hand and it's terrible. That, you know, whether that be losing a job or not making a baseball team or not getting, you know, drafted or whatever it is, that, you know, sometimes that's bad and that just sucks, but let's handle it with grace and sass and humor and, you know, just be positive regardless, because man, how blessed we are, even in the suckiest of moments. That's a terrible word to use, but in the worst moments of our life, that's how you can still like, always try to find the positive in it. And so I hope that, that's what this has taught my kids, is that someday they'll be able to look back and think, hey, my mom went through the crappiest thing and still handled it with, you know, good attitude. So anyway, so that's where we are today. So.
Wow. That's unbelievable. I mean, I just like in awe of your attitude. And it is so evident that you have that. And I'm sure that there are days that you don't feel as upbeat, but it comes out so clearly that you have, you heard that, like, it's all about attitude. And then you were like tripling down on that. Okay, then let me show you how I will handle that. And absolutely, that's got to be so impactful for your kids to see. I was actually reading something just the other day that was talking about, you know, when you're on an airplane, if there's turbulence, everybody looks to the flight attendant. And if the flight attendant is calm, then calms our nerves as a passenger. But if the flight attendant is freaking out, then we all feel more uneasy. And I'm thinking about how you're, what kind of flight attendant you're being to your kids right now. Not that the fear isn't there, but they're looking at you and thinking, okay, but she's positive and she's fighting, so then I'm going to do that too. Like, what an example for your kids.
Well, that's kind. And I'll be honest with you, like, we have days where I'm not okay, where I get sad and I question. And I think there's just as much value in being transparent and honest with your children and being, you know, where I don't want to paint the picture that this is always rosy, because it's not. It's not always great. I don't always feel great. Every day I'm passionate about the fact that this is what Jesus has called me to walk through. But I also want them to be transparent that, listen, there are days that I doubt as well. As I think, you know, listen, there's 1,000 moms out in the world who aren't good to their kids. And I worship my, you know, I love my kids. And, you know, why didn't he pick them to go through this? They could do without their kids. I just think there's so much value in being transparent with them as well. And like I said, still being age appropriate with what you share and things. And obviously that's grown as they've gotten older. But, you know, I want them to see, like, it's okay to have doubts sometimes. It's okay to sometimes question. And sometimes that's what makes us stronger, is whenever we do doubt and we do have questions, and that teaches us to kind of strive to learn the answers or learn more or dig deeper into things. And so, you know, but listen, it's completely changed my perspective on so many things. You know, I yell a whole lot less at umpires, and I yell a whole lot less on the highway when I'm driving. You know, you just have, it kind of changes your perspective of like, listen, if there's a chance I'm going to die, I don't want my kids to remember me being angry. I want them to remember me being full of life and being full of life and love and encouragement. And if your last memory is of your kids seeing you you know, yell at an umpire about how stupid he is. Like, that's not what I want to go down as. You know, I want there to be a better legacy than that. So that's what I'm hoping.
Well, I think the legacy too, that you're leaving by, I think your point about being honest with your kids, obviously with your diagnosis, that is where, you know, where you're being honest is sharing that with them. But also just like, even before, you know, before, if cancer wasn't the battle, that still holds true, you know, is to be honest with your children, no matter what the case, no matter what the circumstances, because that trust between a child and a parent is so important.
You know, I can remember even before I was diagnosed. So my diagnosis was July 10th, 2016. So I'm at 4 years. I forgot to mention that, but so obviously I'm well past where the doctor thought I would be. But before I was diagnosed, there was a friend of a friend who had passed away. And I read her obituary in the paper, and it said, was an incredible housekeeper. And you could always go to her house, and it was always so clean. And that's her legacy. Like, the one thing people remembered was that her house was always clean. And and not that I don't enjoy a clean house, because I love a clean house, but I don't want that to be my legacy. I want my legacy to be that I was loving and nurturing and positive and, you know, always there for them. When you start thinking that we're confronted with the fact that you're going to leave a legacy, you know, obviously I was like, you're going to die, and what's your legacy going to be? I want it to be something that is so purposeful and impactful to my kids, rather than just people thought I dressed nicely or I had a nice house. So, you know, so I think that cancer can really change your perspective and kind of put your house in order.
Right.
Gives you such perspective. So that's been a blessing too. So.
And are those conversations you have directly, like, with the kids about what you want them to be seeing, or is it more for you as a parent, like the way you live? Like, do you have those conversations with the boys saying, you know, narrating basically how you're living your life? Are those conversations, or is it more that's how you live?
I think there's a little bit of both. I mean, obviously you want people to learn more by your actions and what you tell them, because obviously those speak louder, I think, sometimes. But, you know, listen, when you're confronted that you're about to die and you're thinking, okay, if I have 1 year left with my kids, I'm going to pile every life lesson I can into every day. So every drive to school was a life lesson. Every time a kid posts something bad on Instagram, that's a life lesson. You know, I mean, it's just I feel like it's a little bit of a combination of those. I mean, obviously I think any parent, whether it be somebody with cancer or just in general, wants to be seen as a good father or a good mother or somebody that has great principles and great morals and loves Jesus or whatever it is, you know, has these things. But also I think that it's important to share with those kids as well. I mean, you know, I don't walk into my kids and say, oh, I was so positive today and I just did a wonderful job. But, you know, I'm not quite that, right, that way. But, you know, I think it is important for my kids, when I have the opportunity to be able to be positive in a situation where they're not expecting it, I think that's a great time to do it.
And can I ask, I'm kind of curious about how parenting has changed for you with the diagnosis. Is there a different sense of urgency, or how has your parenting changed through that?
Oh, for sure. I think that there is such a sense of urgency. Like, I just want to make sure that I'm not raising jerks. You know, like, I want to make sure, like, if I leave this life, like, you are a good human. And so I have always been really honest with my kids, almost to a fault. I'll have to sometimes call another parent and say, hey, we were in the car today and we had a conversation about what pictures are appropriate to put on Instagram. I just want to let you know that we talked about this. I feel like I've always been honest with my kids, but when you're confronted with a terminal illness, you are like, okay, I have to get in all of these lessons. Like, I have to teach you all of these things. But, you know, at the end of the day, I do think that they just learn so much of that by watching me, you know, about that. I can forget sometimes, but especially when I was first diagnosed, you know, I was so purposeful. I wanted my kids to watch me watch them. Does that make sense? I wanted them to see me see them doing things. I didn't want to be, you know, I didn't want to constantly be on my phone or constantly be watching television. And when my 9-year-old would run up to me and say, watch me jump off the diving board, I mean, I wanted to get right there with it. Like, let's see it, you know, instead of blowing off. So I think you become more personable or more purposeful about making sure your kids, I wanted my kids to remember me. I wanted to, so everything that I was trying to teach them about making them make sure that they remembered what I said. So, you know, so that was really hard to the beginning, because I didn't want Charlie to be 9 years old. And then somebody, when he says 30, say, what was your mom like? And he's like, you know, she yelled a lot. And that's really all I remember. Like, that's not what I didn't want to have them remember me just sleeping in my bed all the time. So I was very purposeful about getting up and getting around the house and still cooking and still cleaning. Even if I didn't feel well, I just told my husband, I said, listen, I'm going to be sick while they're at school from 8 to 3. And at 3 o'clock, it's game on. Like, I'm going to, even if I have to just pretend the whole time, like, I want them to see me be okay. And so, you know, but I think parenting obviously changes. Like, if you think you're going to die soon, you're not going to waste moments. You're going to be purposeful. You're going to make sure that you really try to soak it all in. You know, that's what I did definitely at the very beginning. I'm lucky too, because we're an incredibly tight family. We're incredibly close. We love time together. We have so much fun and laugh so much. And so, you know, I'm grateful for that as well. So yeah. So it's just made me be more purposeful, I think. Mm-hmm. So that's been a great lesson. So,
well, and as I listen to you, I'm thinking that you've had this on, you know, your shoulders for 4 years, and it sounds like you've probably made so many extra deeper memories, you know, because of that sense of urgency in those 4 years. Like, you're thinking of the end in mind, which really I talked to another mom that was saying, you know, think about the end in mind as far as, you know, that will change how you do things. If you're thinking about how you're going to feel at the end of everything, that will impact how you do things. And you have that unfortunate reminder because of cancer, but it's also given you a blessing in a real way, because you are squeezing the daylights out of every day with your kids and your families and activities and things you guys can do together.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And I will say this, that one part of cancer treatment that's missing is really the psychological part of it, the kind of mental part of it. Because, you know, here I was diagnosed with this terminal illness and told I was going to die. And so everybody kind of wanted to prepare you for the end. But I said, you know, I want to know how to live while I know that I'm dying. Like, I want to know, how do I go about every single day and make the most of it? And they're like, well, you've got to just try to make a memory every single day. And I'm like, no, I want to like live. I want to like be in the moment. I don't want to be stressed about trying to make these incredible, like, I want to know how to live and make the most of things, rather than just trying to feel like I got to take my kids to Disney World every day. You know, I don't want it to be that stressful, because I felt like if you try to make a memory every single day, that your kids would get so bogged up with memories that they wouldn't remember anything. Does that make sense?
Totally.
The memory I want my kids to have is of living, and not putting on this air that we were trying to make memories just because I was dying. I wanted them to remember the living part of it. I wanted them to remember us cooking together and, you know, digging a hole together, you know, things that were just normal things, but how I was always present. And I just, that's what I want my memory to be with my kids, is just that I was just present.
You were there. You were there. Yeah. I mean, I think that's so beautiful. And I think it's such a key reminder that we all have that opportunity today, right now, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think it's overwhelming to think we have to make these huge memories. I would think for you to feel like every day doesn't have to be make a wish day, because that's not real life, you know. But so do you do that by, you know, so when you say like, I'm going to be sick, I think that makes so much sense. You know, when you're talking to your husband, like, I'm going to be sick. And then when they're here, I'm not, which is like, let's talk about the mama strength there. Like, that's no joke, you know, like, I'm sure that takes everything in you. But also, I just think that, you know, that does give your kids you, that gives them all of you. And do you, so then to the point of, how do you know, you know, do you put your phone down? Is it like you're saying you want them to see you watching them? Is it how do you feel like you do that, where you feel like you're really living in the moment, even in the mundane moments? Like, what do you feel like you do that's working, or that maybe resonates with your kids?
Well, I hope this is my kids. We may have to ask them to see, but, you know, I'll give you, for instance, like, I had chemo this past week. So that means that I go into the clinic on Monday, and I sit in the chair for 4 to 6 hours and have two chemos there. And then I leave with a chemo that I wear like on a crossbody purse. I wear that for 48 hours and then go back and have it. So, you know, the chemo kind of is always going. So obviously I don't feel so great, but I'll just give you an example of our week and how I feel like I hope that it's impactful. It's like when my kids wake up early in the morning. So my kids are both elite athletes, not that they're prestigious elite. I mean, as far as elite in the sense that they are working so incredibly hard. They, and I know that every mom says their kids are a hard worker, but my kids are exceptional in the way that they focus on their sports and try to be the best that they can be. So they wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go and work out. And so my goal is that every morning, regardless of how bad I'm feeling, I wake up and I cook them a home cooked breakfast. And so they get a home cooked breakfast. They leave at 6:30 in the morning and they go off and they train usually till about 10:30 or 11. And so by the time I always get a text message, hey, mama, we're coming home. And so then I start lunch. So in the time between 6:30 and like 10:30, that's my downtime. If I need to go back to bed, if I need to rest, whatever it is, they don't see that part of it. So hopefully they're just seeing that when I get up in the morning, like I just want them to see that effort that she always got up and made us breakfast, or she always got up and our water jugs were filled, or she always... just those little things, or, you know, like when they get home and, hey, we're going to go out and play cornhole or whatever it is. You want to come join us? And maybe if I don't feel like it, of just making the effort of going out and watching. And I can remember when my kids were really little of, you know, hey, come play cars with me. No, I've got laundry to do. Or, hey, mom, come do this. No, I've got to make this phone call to daddy, or, you know, whatever it is. Of just like, those are my times now where if I'm asked to do something, like, I want to do it, especially now. Peyton is going to be a senior this year. And oh, thinking about him going up to college, one, is so incredibly exciting that I've made it this far to see him go through some of these things that I didn't think I'd be here for. But to think about him like leaving me, I'm like, oh, you only have 43 weekends left with me before you leave for college. You know, so you're more purposeful about it then too. So I think moms, even if they're not going through cancer, can get that perspective when they start thinking about losing the time with their kids, maybe not losing their life and losing time, but just losing time with them leaving or, you know, getting married or whatever it is, about just being more purposeful. Like, listen, I want to soak all your yumminess in right now. Like, let me, you know, just let me spend as much time with you as I can. And so I try to do that. And like I said, it just hasn't come as a surprise to my kids because we've always been really close anyway, but just being able to be open and be honest and share in the day-to-day, you know, listen, I know my son is 17, so he's dealing with temptations like I dealt with 17. So being open and being honest and be able to talk about those things, like, listen, what a blessing that is that I have that. And I hope that I would have that regardless of having cancer or not, that we just wanted to be close in that way. So.
Right. I mean, I am in that phase of, I have a 3, 5, and 7-year-old girls and I work from home, and I am absolutely, there are times when I say no, you know, and the idea of them going off to school is so far away and, you know, and it's, you know, and so, but as you talk and you just think, time is the greatest asset. It's the greatest of all, you know, the rest of it can go away. Time is what is so precious. And of course, you know that, you know, so clearly now, but just hearing your perspective is a great reminder to those of us that either don't have that, you know, burden of, you know, cancer or don't have kids soon leaving, but just a reminder of like, take advantage of having that time, you know, and say yes.
I mean, just think about, I can think about whenever I was a kid and my parents divorced when I was very young, and they have a lot of marriages between them as well. And so we lived with my dad, a single dad, and, you know, I can remember him providing for us and he worked a lot and things like that. And he didn't come to a lot of basketball games or my golf tournaments and that kind of stuff. But I can remember the one basketball game he was at, and I remember him watching me. And I've always thought about that, of how impactful that was, of all the things that he provided for us or whatever times that he was there. That's what I remember the most. And that's what I want my kids to remember, that sure, we have a nice home and we drive nice cars. We have a nice koi pond and, you know, all of those silly little things, material things. But I want them to remember that, man, whenever I looked in the sand, there she was. Like, that's my memory. And so, you know, there's a lot of times where Chad will say, my husband will say, oh man, you had chemo, won't you just stay home? And I'm like, like, I want them to always see me. I will be sick all day long, but I am not going to miss something where I can remember they can see me. So, you know, that seems so silly, but, you know, just, you can see when you watch kids play, you can see them kind of look back at you every once in a while. And that's what I mean. When I wanted them to see me, see them, I just felt like that's always been really impactful to me. And I was hoping that would be, I think that gives kids confidence. It gives kids confidence that you've got their back, that you're watching what they're doing. You don't want them to get hurt. And you're not distracted. Like, I just want my kids to feel like they are my whole world. And sure, I have this phone, but man, I'm watching you and I am connected to you. So, I don't know. Maybe my kids maybe will be in counseling someday and say that that's totally weirder than that. I don't know.
But I don't think so.
I think it's a good thing.
I'm sure they feel the love. I mean, as you're talking, yeah, I think it's so obvious that there's nothing that feels more loving than feeling like someone is caring for you or watching you or cheering for you, sure, or, yeah, you know, it's just there, you know, it's just being there.
Yeah.
You do not want to miss a minute with Gina Tolle. Please come back for our next episode with the brilliant Gina Tolle. She's going to continue to bring the parenting insights and unique perspective. You do not want to miss our next conversation coming up soon.